Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
Graphic Audio presents William W. Johnstone Smoke Jensen, The Mountain Man number 32, Wrath of the Mountain Man. Narrated by Mort Shelby, with performances by James Lewis, Richard Rowan, Ken Jackson, Eric Messner, Thomas Penny, Michael Glenn, Nanette Savard, Kimberly Gilbert, Christopher Graybill, Drew Kokas, Tim Getman, Christopher Sheeran, and Joe Brack.
Sheriff Buck Tolliver set a bottle of whiskey in the middle of the rough-hewn table and took his seat. There were four other men sitting there, each as rough and weathered-looking as the old boards of the table. Jerry Hogarth, known to friends and foe alike simply as Hog, both because of his great size and his rather slovenly personal hygiene, grabbed the bottle and splashed a generous amount into the tin cup in front of him. Bubba Barclay, sitting on Hog's left, gave him a rough elbow.
You gonna pass that bottle on over here? You gonna try and hog it all to yourself, Hog?
Bubba was almost as big as Hog, but unfortunately he also had about the same mental ability. That is to say, very little. Hog gave him a look, but shoved the bottle over with the back of a grimy hand as big as a ham. Before Bubba was through pouring, Jimmy Akins, called the Kid by everyone because he favored fancy gunfighter attire and looked to be only about 18 instead of his nearly 23, shifted the toothpick around in his mouth and pointed at his own cup.
You too lazy to pour your own? Are you trying to keep your gun hand free in case some desperado breaks in here and you have to fast draw on him?
Bubba was referring to the Kid's rather irritating habit of trying to use his left hand for everything in order to keep his right hand hovering near the butt of his pistol. He'd read in a dime novel that it was something the real kid named Billy used to do. Buck ignored him and addressed himself to the remaining man at the table, Jeb Hardy, who, unlike the others, was well-groomed and neatly dressed and might almost have looked like an accountant if you failed to notice his dead, cold, snake-like eyes, the way his pistol was tied down low on his right hip, and the way the wooden handle of the Colt was worn down from frequent use.
How'd we do last week, Jeb?
We obtained stake certificates to four new mines and partnership agreements on three others.
Any trouble?
Not too much. A couple of miners fell and broke their arms. One got a broken jaw, but we didn't have to plan any of them forked end up.
Buck nodded, pleased with the week's work. Before long, he and his band of men would own or control 90% of the best gold and silver mines in the county.
I want to know something, Buck.
Yeah, Hog?
How come we do all the dirty work and you and Jeb get to keep most of the profits?
It's very simple, Hog. So even a dumb son of a bitch like you ought to be able to understand it. This badge and my job as sheriff of this county is what is keeping all of our butts out of jail. And Jeb's law degree is what enables him to finesse these claim stakes and partnership agreements through the courthouse and, if they're ever challenged, through the court so that we'll get our money without being hauled into jail and strung up for claim jumping and murder. All you bring to the table, Hog, is your muscle, which I can hire on any street in any town in this county for half what I'm paying you. Am I making myself clear?
Yeah, I guess so.
No, Hog, you better know so. Because if you have any doubts at all about the fairness of this arrangement, Buck and I can change it in about 2 minutes flat, and you'll be back shoveling horse shit in the livery so you can eat.
No, what you're paying me is just fine.
Speaking of money, weekend is coming up, so take that and go on into town and live it up a little bit.
Buck got up from the table.
But be careful not to flash around the whole wad and draw attention to yourselves. And you better not cause any trouble in my town. Remember what I said. Save the rough stuff for work.
Buck walked out of the old ramshackle mining camp where he always met his men. Jeb walked out and stood next to him.
You think we need to worry about Hog?
Nah, He's too dumb to try and go against us. Even he knows it'd be the end of a good thing for him.
How about the others?
Same thing. Where else are they going to go to earn so much money for so little work?
That's for sure. Because we are making a hell of a lot of money.
And we're going to keep on making it, partner. As long as you keep any of the men we get the claims from too scared to go to the authorities.
Any of them that do manage to grow the cojones to make a complaint won't live long enough to testify at a trial. That I'll guarantee you.
Even so, I don't want any complaints to come to the attention of the governor. So make sure you step on anyone who might even be thinking about shooting off their mouths.
You let me worry about that, Buck. You just keep on keeping the law off our backs and we'll have enough money to retire to St. Louis within a year.
St. Louis? Hell, I'm planning on going to New York City. I hear beautiful women are as thick as fleas on a hound dog up there.
Yeah, but if you're planning on going up there, we might want to work an extra year. Those New York ladies are mighty expensive to maintain, especially for somebody as butt ugly and downright crude as you, Buck.
You son of a bitch.
I'm just teasing you, my partner. Don't take no offense now, you hear?
Yeah, well, if I did take offense at something you said, Jeb, you'd wake up with a bullet in your skull.
Oh, now don't let your mouth overload your ass, Buck, or someone might think you're good enough to take me down.
We may just have to find that out one of these days, Jeb.
Anytime, Buck. Anytime.
Buck rode back into what he liked to refer to as his town on his dun gelding, sitting high in the saddle. Chest thrown out and a steely glint in his eye, should anyone not know he was top dog in this kennel. He'd come to the small mining camp known as Payday a few years back, when it was a typical lawless, anything-goes, wild and rowdy camp. Buck had seen his opportunity, and he'd bought himself a tin badge through a mail-order magazine, and he'd pinned it on. Anyone who had the temerity to question his authority found themselves looking down the barrel of his .45 Colt or the twin barrels of the 10-gauge express gun he carried in a rifle boot on his saddle. Buck was smart enough not to come down hard on the things the miners like to do after working their claims all day. So he let the whores and the saloons and the gambling palaces stay in business, as long as they gave him a little cash on the side for security. He did, however, run off both the town's lawyers, not wanting anyone but himself deciding what was legal and what was illegal. And when a drunk confided to all who would listen in a saloon one day that he was not only a good barber, but that he was a better-than-average dentist and a doctor to boot, Buck managed to convince him the town needed him and that he could do worse than make Payday his home. Dr. Hezekiah Bentley had settled in, and if the townspeople could manage to get injured before 5 in the afternoon, when Bentley went off the wagon every day, they had a fair chance of getting fixed up and surviving the experience. If, on the other hand, they had the misfortune to get shot or stabbed or to break a bone after dark, they tried their best to survive on their own until Doc woke up the next day, was over his hangover, and then they would consult him. He was a hell of a lot safer that way. As Buck rode down the main street, he nodded and tipped his hat at some of the ladies of the evening as they passed. Buck was pretty popular in town, having learned it was better to govern by giving the people what they wanted rather than enforcing a stricter interpretation of the law. So in Payday, just about everything was legal. Everything except making Buck Tolliver angry. Every week, usually on Friday afternoons when most of the surrounding miners were in town to spend the dust they'd pried from the earth the previous week, Buck held court in the largest saloon in town. He would place a chair on the top of the bar, and any men with grievances against one another would come before him to argue their cases. Buck would nod sagely, then rule, usually for the man with the most money or the best mind, extracting his fee for legal advice later when no one was around to witness the transaction. The few men who didn't appreciate Buck's wisdom or his judgments would often later be found shot or stabbed to death. It didn't take long for the people of Payday to get the hint. Buck Tolliver, for better or worse, was the law in their town, and if they didn't like it, they should just move on. It was healthier that way. After a few years of this, making a good living but not getting what he considered rich, Buck decided to expand his horizons. Payday was growing larger every day, and more and more people were coming up into the mountains of northern Colorado to make their fortune by mining. He remembered a friend of his brother's, a man named Jeb Hardy, who'd managed to get a law degree through the mail and was working minor swindles on people back in the big city of Denver. He took a vacation, made a run over to Denver, and looked Jeb up. Over drinks, after sharing a toast to Buck's dead brother, Buck put his proposition to Jeb. If he'd come back to Payday and take care of the legal matters, Buck had an idea how they could both get rich without having to work overly hard doing it. Soon, they had a thriving business. Jeb and the hard cases they'd hired would locate isolated mines and then threaten or beat the men into giving them part of their operations in exchange for security to keep other claim jumpers away. The fact that Jeb and his men were the only claim jumpers in the area mattered not at all. There was no one other than Sheriff Buck Tolliver to complain to. And for some strange reason, that never seemed to do any good. Most of the miners just gritted their teeth and gave Jeb and his men their percentage and kept on working their mines. The few who refused, well, they soon found they couldn't mine much gold or silver with broken arms or wrecked equipment. Those that still weren't convinced soon found themselves dead shortly after signing over their claims to Jeb. It was a neat scheme with very little risk, as long as Buck Tolliver was sheriff and as long as Jeb could find men willing to do whatever he wanted to make the plan work. So far, neither had been a problem, and Jeb and Buck just kept getting richer and richer. Members of the Nez Perce tribe that made their home in far northern Colorado watched as the tall, broad-shouldered man with the salt and pepper hair walked among their young Palouse studs. He stood a bit over 6 feet tall, shoulders as wide as an axe handle, and even the loose cut of his buckskin shirt and trousers could not disguise the muscles that rippled and moved under the skins. A slight smile curled the lips of Smoke Jensen as he finished his examination of the young Palouse studs he'd come up here to barter for. He ducked under the lariat rope that served the Indians as a makeshift corral and moved with long strides to stand next to the chief of the tribe, Gray Wolf. As he was walking over, Smoke overheard one of the young warriors of the tribe running his mouth to his friends.
"You might tell Running Deer over there that even if by some miracle he was able to defeat me in battle and take my woman, she would break him over her knee as easily as I do this Lucifer."
"If I told him that, though it be true that you speak with straight tongue, for I remember your woman from last year, it would break Running Deer's spirit, which is high with the bravery of youth, my friend."
"I know, old friend, so I'll handle it my own way."
He turned to face the group of young braves gathered near the fire, and he let his eyes seek out the one who'd said just loudly enough for Smoke to hear that if the chief would allow it, he would whip the old man and take his woman into his teepee for the winter.
"Running Deer, would you show me how these young studs run? The chief tells me you're one of the best riders of green broke horses in the tribe."
"Chief Gray Wolf has told the mountain man the truth, and all of these horses can run like the wind. But there is one who is faster by far than the others. I call him Blizzard, because he is like the strong wind from the north in winter as it races through the mountains, unstoppable."
Smoke nodded, deciding he would name the horse Storm if he proved to be as fast as Running Deer claimed. Cal and Pearlie, Smoke's two hands who'd accompanied him on the trip up from Smoke's ranch in southern Colorado, stood nearby, their foreheads wrinkled as they tried to follow the conversation. During the 2 weeks it took them to drive the mares up into the mountains, Smoke had tried to teach them as much of the Nez Perce tongue as he could, but since they'd never heard it before, it had been slow going for the two men, though they did try hard. Cal, barely out of his teens and not much older than the young braves near the fire, leaned his head close to Pearly, a grizzled veteran who was almost 30.
What did that brave call that horse? Snowstorm?
Something like that. All I got was that he thinks the horse can run some.
Let's see if he's right.
Cal swung up into the saddle of his own Palouse stud, Dusty, while Pearly climbed up onto his horse, Cold. Running Deer grabbed Storm's mane and swung up onto his back. As Cal and Pearly spurred their broncs after the Indian, it was clear that Storm was indeed something special. He left both Cal and Pearly far behind as he raced at breakneck speed. He went across the small plateau that contained the Indian's camp, weaving in and out and through the many stands of small ponderosa pines as if they weren't even there. Without even slowing down, Running Deer took Storm over the edge of the cliff and down the steep slope at the side of the plateau, and that stud never stumbled, but ran like he'd been born to do nothing else. Cal and Pearly, not wanting to break their necks, reined in at the edge of the cliff and watched in amazement as Running Deer and Storm made a wide sweep and raced back up the slope. Man and horse were only slightly slower coming up the grade than they'd been going down.
Jimmy, that mount really can run like the wind.
Wind? Hell, more like a tornado.
After Running Deer had returned Storm to the corral and joined Smoke and the others near the fire, Smoke grinned and shook his hand.
If you ever want a job as a wrangler, Running Deer, come on down to the Sugarloaf, and you'll have a job for life.
Though it would be a great honor to work with the man my people call the Last Mountain Man. I could never leave these mountains, or my people, for to do so would be to make my heart small.
Golly, Running Deer, I ain't never seen nobody ride like you do. It's like you was part of that bronc.
Thank you, Mr. Cal. We Nez Perce are taught to ride almost before we are taught to walk. It is something all of my brothers can do.
Yeah, but I'll just bet you ain't none of them can do it near as good as you, Running Deer.
The young man ducked his head, unwilling to seem arrogant.
You are right, Pearly. Running Deer is the best of the young braves on horseback. They all wish to be like him.
Smoke winked at the chief and put his hand on Running Deer's shoulder, leading him over to the small remuda of studs that Smoke had brought from the Sugar Loaf.
So tell me what you think of these studs, Running Deer. I brought them up here to trade with your people for some studs of a different bloodline, so that my remuda back home doesn't get too inbred.
Running Deer nodded, his eyes on the horses. He ducked under the lariat corral and walked among them, running his hands on their necks, checking a few horses' teeth or withers or hooves. After a few moments, he smiled slightly, about as much of a seal of approval as he could make.
They are very fine, Mountain Man. Are they too of the Nez Perce?
Not these directly, Running Deer, but their fathers and mothers were all acquired from some of your brother's tribes a few years back.
I thought so. For I can tell they are of the true Palouse blood, undiluted by your American quarter horses or thoroughbreds. These will make very fine breeders for our mares, Chief Grey Wolf.
It is, as you White Eyes say, a deal, Mountain Man. Now, it is time for a feast with our new friends. Have the squaws got the venison ready?
I got a side of beef on one of the pack animals I've brought up all the way from my ranch for you. If you'd like to have it instead of deer meat, Chief.
It has been a long time since I've eaten beef, Mountain Man. At least beef that was freely given to us instead of that which wandered into our camp and accidentally fell upon a spear.
Smoke nodded at Pearly.
Cal, grab that beef off the pack horse and let's eat. I'm so hungry my stomach thinks my throat's being cut.
While the beefsteak sizzled and spit on frying pans over the open fire, Smoke and Grey Wolf talked.
It is good that your braves know how to be friends with white men.
Yes, my friend. But not all white men are friends to us as you are. We must still be careful not to approach white men on the mountain unless we are invited. For some will still shoot to kill us on sight.
Is it still that bad?
It has never changed.
When the squaws signaled the chief that the food was ready, Cal and Pearly and the braves all gathered around the fire to eat large slabs of beefsteak and vegetables. There were no women present, as they typically ate whatever was left over later while the men all napped after their meal. After the men and Smoke and the boys had finished most of the side of beef he'd brought, Smoke and Chief Grey Wolf sat in the shelter of a lean-to and smoked and drank coffee.
Much better than pinion bean coffee. This is much too good for the braves. I believe I'll save this for my use alone.
Even the white man has some good things to offer to your people, Chief.
That is true, Mountain Man. But even though my people live way up here in the High Lonesome, we have not escaped the corrupting ways of the White Eyes.
Oh?
Yes. The yellow metal we take from the streams and mountain caves to make jewelry for our squaws is much sought after by the White Eyes from nearby towns. Some of my more rebellious braves have learned that they can trade the yellow metal for firewater. It is a terrible thing what it does to these young men. They begin to act like a horse that has eaten loco weed.
I've seen the trouble that our whiskey can cause your people. And there are some among us who think that men who trade liquor to you should be punished severely.
If I find out who has been doing this thing, you can be sure they will be punished. And punished to the death.
It appears that you have many fine young men in your tribe who still follow the old ways, Chief Grey Wolf.
Yes. My people are quite lucky that way. Some of the other tribes are having quite a problem keeping their young people in the mountains. Once they get a taste of the white man's food and drink, it is hard for them to live in the old manner. Dog just doesn't taste near as good as beef.
You're not alone in that, my friend. Even in the land of the white man, we're having much of the same problems. Our young people, too, are leaving farms and ranches and heading into the big cities, tired of having to work hard from dawn to dusk and not having a whole lot to show for it at the end of the day. I don't have a wrangler on my spread who is under the age of 25, except for Cal. All of the boys in their teens want to go to Denver or even bigger towns to make their way in the new world.
To all the young ones who are not afraid to stay with the old ways, Mountain Man.
I'll drink to that.
Smoke looked up and saw Cal in the distance with his gun pointed straight up in the air.
Damn!
He recognized the form of Pearly lying still at Cal's feet. Smoke jumped to his feet and bounded across the meadow to where Cal was bending over Pearly, whose face was pale and waxen looking. The young man was clearly unconscious.
What happened?
We was playing fox and rabbit with the braves, and Pearly was the rabbit, and we was chasing him across the field when the horse stumbled in a prairie dog hole. Pearly was thrown over there against that there log.
Cal pointed a few feet away. Smoke glanced over and saw a dead Rocky Mountain rattlesnake lying next to the log, Pearly's knife pinning its head to the ground. Pearly had fallen against the log, moving it and disturbing the rattlesnake that was curled up underneath it. The frightened reptile must have struck at him before he even saw it. Smoke leaned over and began to examine Pearly's body for the telltale twin punctures.
Where'd it get him?
Before he passed out, Pearly said it got him twice, once in the leg and once in the neck.
Damn!
Smoke turned his attention to Pearly's legs, quickly finding the bite mark there. He drew his big bowie knife from the scabbard on his belt and made crisscrossing cuts over the two puncture wounds. He lowered his head and began to suck the blood and poison out of the wound. After a few minutes, he stopped, sleeving blood off his mouth with his arm while Cal took his bandana off and made a tight bandage over the wound, stopping the flow of blood.
You think he's gonna make it, Smoke?
I don't know, Cal. He's strong and he's a fighter, so he's got a better chance than most. And he's lucky that the snake struck him in the leg first. Most of his venom probably went into the leg and not his neck.
Chief Grey Wolf squatted next to Pearly, his eyes narrow with concern.
Mountain Rattler.
Such a bite always means trouble, and one in the neck is almost always deadly. I've only once seen a brave survive such a bite, and never a squaw or young one.
Are there any towns near here that might have a doctor in them?
There is such a town, less than a day's ride from here. The white men call it Payday. It is full of men searching the mountains for the yellow and silver metals. It is a very tough town, Mountain Man. But I believe there is a medical man living there.
Can you have your men make a travois to carry Pearly on while you tell me how to get there?
I will do better than that. I will have Running Deer lead you to the town, and I will have some of my braves accompany you as far as the town to keep you safe.
Keep me safe?
There are many bad men in the area who would rather steal the yellow metal than work to dig it out of the ground. If they think you have money, they might attack you, which would slow you getting help for young Pearly.
God help any man who gets in the way of Pearly getting a doctor.
After Pearly was placed on the travois and covered with blankets and furs against the cold. Chief Gray Wolf leaned down and placed a small leather pouch under the covers over Pearlie's heart. He looked up.
It is my medicine bag. It will help keep his heart strong and brave during his fight against the poison of the snake.
Smoke nodded his appreciation and shook the chief's hand. And then he and Cal began the long ride to town called Payday. They had to go slow since the rarely used trail was so faint as to barely be visible, and it was bumpy with rocks and tufts of mountain grass. As they rode, Running Deer looked at Smoke and saw his worried expression. He glanced back at the Travois.
This man, Pearlie, he is like a brother to the Mountain Man?
More like a son.
He has been with you a long time.
Yeah, Pearlie's been with me for a spell. And I reckon no desert rattler is going to succeed in putting him in the ground when a lot of hard men have failed.
Since they were moving so slowly, Smoke was able to push the horses closer and closer to Payday through the night. He stopped and made camp only after one of the young braves traveling with him fell asleep on the back of his horse and fell to the ground. While Cal and Smoke made a campfire and pulled the travois with Pearlie on it close to the heat, Running Deer and his friends pulled salted dried venison from their pouches and began to chew on the hard, jerky-type meat. Running Deer raised his eyebrows in question when Cal handed him a plate with a still-steaming steak and a pile of beans on it.
You like this a whole lot better than that there jerky you've been chewing on. Now tell your friends to dig in and help themselves to the beans in the pot and the meat in the skillet. I ain't no waitress, you know.
As Running Deer chewed, he rolled his eyes and grinned at Cal.
You are right, Cal. This is much better than pemmican.
Smoke took his last bite and started to get up as Cal walked over to him.
Give me that plate, Smoke, and I'll clean him up before we put him away.
Thanks, Cal.
Smoke glanced over at Pearlie, lying still as death on the travois. He wished that Pearlie would raise his head up and say,
"Is that food I smell?"
Smoke grinned at the thought, knowing Pearlie was as sick as he could be to miss a meal and not complain about it. The next morning, Smoke woke up to find a fine dust and a snow cover in the camp. To his surprise, Cal was already awake and had a fire roaring and coffee boiling.
Glad to see you finally decide to crawl out of them blankets, Smoke. We've been burning daylight for more than half an hour now. I thought for a minute there I was going to have to light a fire under you to get your eyes open.
Smoke looked around the camp and noticed there was no sign of the Indians.
Where'd Running Deer and his friends go to?
They lit out of here just after daylight. Said the town's right up on this trail, about half a day's ride, and they figured even a couple of white eyes like us couldn't manage not to find it.
What about the horses?
They're going to drive them on over to the south side of the town. Keep them there until we head back toward Big Rock. And Running Deer said not to worry or hurry. They'd stay with the studs as long as we needed them to and make sure they had plenty of grass and water. You want me to scramble up a couple of hen's eggs and some fatback?
Smoke glanced over at Pearlie, who lay still and pale as a corpse on his travois.
No, since we're only a few hours from town, let's shag our mounts and see if we can get Pearlie there to see the doctor and worry about eating later.
All right.
Cal moved over to lay his palm on Pearlie's forehead.
You don't seem to have much fever. That's a good sign, ain't it?
Smoke nodded, but he knew that Pearlie was far from out of the woods yet. The only reason he was still alive at all was the main portion of the snake's venom had gone into his leg and not into his neck.
Yeah, that's a good sign, Cal.
But it wasn't fever and infection Smoke was worried about. It was the effect the snake's venom was having on Pearlie's brain. It wouldn't do much good if the body survived, but there was nobody home in the mine. Smoke and Cal were about an hour down the trail when Smoke noticed two men ride out of the tree line on their right and begin to move toward him.
Cal.
Both he and Cal let their hands drop to their thighs and they loosened rawhide hammer thongs on their colts. The men had made no threatening signs, but Smoke had survived a lot of years in the High Lonesome by being careful. Not trusting anyone until they earned it. He smiled when he saw Cal's eyes just as suspicious as his. Seems Cal was picking up his habits. As the men approached, Smoke saw that they were tough, hard-looking men and wore their guns tied down low on their legs as both he and Cal did.
Howdy.
Smoke gave a half smile and inclined his head, his hand staying near the handle of his pistol.
My name's Hogg. This here's Bubba. Your friend don't look so good.
He got snake bit. We're taking him to a town called Payday. You know it?
Yeah. It's up on the trail another couple hours.
You men got any gold in them saddlebags?
Well, what we have or haven't got in our saddlebags is none of your business, mister.
Hogg's eyes flashed with anger, and he spurred his horse right up next to Smoke's, trying to intimidate him with his massive size. Smoke noted the man was almost as wide as he was tall, and his hands were big as hams, with scarred knuckles indicating he'd been in a lot of fights.
Well, that ain't a real friendly comment, mister.
Maybe that's because you aren't my friend, mister.
Hogg scowled and swung a haymaker right fist at Smoke's head. Smoke leaned back in the saddle just enough for the fist to connect with nothing but air, and then he twisted in his seat as he sent a straight right hand into Hogg's chest. Bubba, seeing this, reached for his pistol, but he found himself staring down the barrel of Cal's Navy Colt before he could clear leather. He slowly raised his hands out away from his gun butt and tried to lick his lips, but his mouth was too damn dry.
Don't shoot me, mister.
I won't listen you try to grab that hog leg on your hip.
Smoke eased down out of his saddle and walked over to take Hogg's pistol out of his belt and throw it into a nearby snowbank.
Damn you, you son of a bitch. I ought to beat you to death.
Did you say talk me to death or beat me to death?
Smoke leaned to the side and threw a hard left hook into Hogg's right kidney as he stumbled past.
If you've had enough, I'd like to get on my way. My friend needs to get to a doctor, and you're holding us up.
Sure. Go on, mister.
When Smoke turned to get back up on his horse, Hogg pulled a long, thin-bladed knife from his scabbard on the back of his belt, and he rushed at Smoke. Smoke heard him and whirled around. As Hogg rushed at him, Smoke stepped to the side and lashed out with his left foot, catching the side of Hogg's left knee.
I don't think your leg is broken, but I wouldn't put any weight on it until you see a doctor, if I were you.
Take that pistol out of your holster and hand it over.
What are you gonna do?
Cal took the pistol and stuck it in his belt.
I'm gonna leave this in the middle of that trail up ahead. If you're smart, which you sure as hell don't look like, you'll get it and ride into the opposite direction.
And if we don't?
Why then I suppose I'll just have to kill you next time I see you.
Smoke winked at Cal as they spurred their horses on up the trail toward Payday.
You think they'll follow us and give us more trouble?
No, they've had enough for one day. And the big one I put down is going to have trouble walking for at least a day or two. So I don't think they'll come after us.
I almost wish they would. I'm so mad I kind of like to take it out on somebody.
Yeah, but let's get Pearly to the dock first. We can worry about the other thing later.
Smoke shook his head sadly as he and Cal passed a hand-lettered sign that read Payday. The place could barely be called a town in his estimation. It consisted mainly of one long, wide road with two smaller ones branching off at its right angles. There were very few buildings that were made entirely of wood and stone, most being large tents with a wooden front or perhaps at best a four-cornered open roof over the tent. There were, however, some homes that were built in a more suitable manner, but they were few and far between. It seemed every other tent along the main street was a saloon or gambling establishment, but only one general store and an assay office to break up the monotony of the bars. As he and Cal rode down the main street, they drew the stares of several of the townsfolk. Smoke also considered unprepossessing. Most of the men in town were hard-looking miner types, wearing the canvas trousers made famous by Levi Strauss in recent years. There were precious few females, other than the occasional dance hall girdies that walked up and down the street advertising their wares by wearing elaborately frilly low-cut gowns, makeup cakes so thick on their faces you could hardly tell their race, much less whether they were in fact pretty or not. When Smoke passed the building that had a sign on it reading Sheriff's Office, and one next to it that read Bank, He knew they wouldn't likely find much help for Pearl here.
Jiminy smoke, I don't see no signs for a doctor or anything like that.
This place is hardly more than a glorified mining camp, Cal. I only hope Chief Grey Wolf was right about there being a medical person here.
Smoke reined his horse in front of the sheriff's office and got out of the saddle. He walked up to the door to see if the sheriff could direct him to a doctor, but he found the door locked.
The sheriff ain't here, mister.
The speaker was an older man with a full gray beard, sitting on a rough-hewn bench on the small boardwalk in front of the office.
You have any idea when he'll be back?
The man got up from his bench and ambled over to stand next to the travois with Pearly on it.
Nope, can't say as I do. What's wrong with your friend? He shot or something?
No, he's been snake bit real bad. We came here looking for a doctor.
The nearest real doctor's up in Pueblo, about 50 miles from here.
Damn.
I bet we do got us a dentist, and he takes care of most of our doctoring when we need it, and when he's sober.
Well, where's the dentist?
You take that first cross street up there and go left. Or is it right? Well, his office is about 100 yards down that road on the right. Maybe the left. You can't hardly miss it since it's a regular two-story house and he's got a big old barber pole in front painted red and white.
Much obliged.
Smoke swung up into the saddle and they started off toward the dentist's office. 10 minutes later, Smoke was knocking on the office door.
Yeah, what do you want?
We have a man who's been badly snake bit.
You cut it and sucked the poison out?
He had two bites. I cut and sucked the one on his leg, but the one on his neck was right over a blood vessel, and I didn't dare cut into it.
Neck bite, huh? When did he get bit, and which one did he get first?
Yesterday, about noon. He got the leg first.
Yeah, well, that's lucky. It's a good sign he managed to stay alive this long.
Can you help him?
I don't rightly know, mister. I'll take a look at him and feed him plenty of beef broth and try and keep his wounds from festering up too bad, but that's about all I can do here. Bring him in here. I got a room where I keep patients who are recovering from one thing or another.
Smoke and Cal picked Pearly up and carried him into the dentist's office and on back into a room at the rear of the house that contained three double beds, each with a basin and towel on a nightstand next to it. There weren't any other patients present, so Smoke picked the nearest bed and they laid Pearly down on it gently. Smoke stripped Pearly's pants and shirt off and pulled up the leg of his long underwear so the dentist could see the leg wound.
My name's Hezekiah Bentley.
The man probed around the red, angry-looking bite mark on Pearly's leg with his fingers. The edges of the wound were dark blue, and there seemed to be a small crater in between the twin punctures.
I'm Smoke Jensen, and this is Calvin Woods. The patient's name is Pearly.
Are you the Smoke Jensen?
Well, I don't know any others. Why? Does it make a difference?
Bentley shook his head and turned his attention back to Pearly. Now he was examining the neck wound, which was also starting to shed a little pus and was just as colorful as the leg bite.
No, it's just that we don't get too many visitors around here, and the ones we do get are miners, not famous gunfighters.
I'm no gunfighter. I gave that up years ago. I'm just a rancher now.
Uh-huh.
Well, Dr. Bentley, what do you suggest we do?
Yeah, like I said, leave Pearly here with me for a while. I'll keep his wounds clean and try to get some nourishment into him. If he wakes up and is in pain, I'll give him some laudanum, but that's about all I can do.
You need one of us to stay here and help you take care of him.
No, I got me a housekeeper who helps out when someone's staying here, and I expect you and your young friend would only be in the way anyhow.
Well, Cal and I have a string of Palouse studs outside of town that we need to get back to my ranch in Big Rock. So if you think you won't be needing us, we'll do that and then come right back here.
Smoke dug in his pocket, pulled out a wad of greenback bills, and put them in the dentist's hand.
This ought to take care of the board and medical care till we get back.
Hell, Mr. Jensen, this'll take care of him for a year.
Smoke leaned down close to the man, and his eyes were flat and hard.
I don't plan on him being here a year, Dr. Bentley, but he damn sure better get your full attention while he is here. And he better be a whole lot better when we get back. You understand me?
Yes, sir, Mr. Jensen. You can count on me to do my best for the young man.
Smoke took a piece of paper and the stub of a pencil out of his pocket and wrote something on the paper.
Here's my name, and the name of my town. I can be contacted by telegraph in care of Sheriff Monty Carson at that location. You do have a telegraph here, don't you?
Oh, yes, sir. We just got it put in this last spring.
Good. Then I'll expect you to keep me informed. And if the news is good, there'll be plenty more of those greenbacks for you when I come back.
Well, that ain't really necessary, Mr. Jensen. I took an oath when I became a dentist, and I always take good care of my patients, paying or otherwise.
I wasn't trying to insult you, Doctor, but I expect to pay people who work for me. I've always found that the better the pay, the better the job done.
Well, no, I didn't say I wasn't going to take the money, Mr. Jensen. I just wanted you to know I'll do my dead level best to keep your friend alive.
I know you will, Dr. Bentley, and I'll expect nothing less. Oh, and one more thing, Doc.
Mr. Jensen?
I've heard tell that you have a large thirst and you tend to slake it in the nearest saloon.
Why, that's outrageous.
Now, Doc, I don't care what you do when you don't have a patient under your care. But as long as my friend is here, you will stay sober. Or you will be dead. Do I make myself clear?
But,
Those are really your only two choices, Dr. Bentley. Sober and alive, drunk and dead. Do you understand?
Yes, sir.
Good. Then we'll see you when we get back. And, Doc, we better see both you and Pearlie.
But, Mr. Jensen, I've already told you, your friend is powerful sick. He could die at any time, whether I'm drunk or sober.
Well, if he does die, you better be damn sure you're sober when it happens. And you better stay that way until I get back here, or there will be hell to pay.
Smoke and Cal got on their horses and rode out of town to the south. Meet up with Running Deer and the Braves holding their studs for him. Cal, who was leading Pearlie's horse on a dally rope, slowed his horse when they came abreast of a large wooden barn with a sign on it that read Livery Stable.
Hold on, Smoke. I'm gonna leave Pearlie's horse here just in case he gets well and wants to go for a ride before we get back.
Sure thing, Cal. Heck, he may even beat us home since we're gonna be herding these broncs.
Cal tied his horse to a hitching rail out front. Walked Pearlie's mount into the large barn. He was out 10 minutes later, and he was smiling.
I told the boy to let the doc know he was holding Pearlie's horse just in case. I also told the boy to exercise him every day and make sure he gets plenty of grain.
Yep. Yeah.
You tell that boy how Cold got his name?
Yep, only maybe I didn't tell him just how little Cold likes to be ridden in the morning. I figure he'll find out soon enough.
Say, Cal, it's less than half as far to Pueblo as it is back to Big Rock, isn't it?
Yep, I reckon that's about right. Why?
Well, it'd take us a couple of weeks or more to drive those ponies all the way to Big Rock and then get back here to see how Pearlie's doing.
Mm-hmm. And that's if we don't take a day or two to let our butts recover from all this time in the saddle.
Why don't we take them up to Pueblo instead? We can put them on a railroad car and have them taken to Big Rock. I can wire Monty Carson to have Lewis or someone else meet the train and take the horses out to the ranch. That would save us a passel of time, and we wouldn't be so worn out from the long trip.
Yeah, and we'd be able to get back here twice as fast to watch over Pearlie, too.
Good. Then that's what we'll do.
Hey, Smoke. I seen some train tracks outside of town here in a small station platform. Why don't we just load the horses there? That'd save us a ride to Pueblo.
I considered that, Cal. But this is just a quick stop on the train's way. They won't allow loading of livestock at such a place. Just people.
Whew, Smoke, I'm sure glad you thought of that. I really wasn't looking forward to spending the next 3 or 4 weeks living in this here saddle.
Well, me neither, Cal. Me neither. These old bones just don't take that kind of punishment anymore.
When they met up with Running Deer, the young Brave's first question was, how was Pearlie doing? Smoke shook his head and shrugged.
The doctor thinks it's a good sign that he lived this long after the snake bite. Hopefully, Pearlie will wake up soon, but he really doesn't know what's going to happen over the next few days.
I will have our tribe do a healing dance around the campfires every night until the Great Spirit tells us that our new friend is well.
Thank you, Running Deer. I'm sure that the Great Spirit will hear and listen to your people, for the Nez Perce are much favored by the Great Spirit.
That is true, Mountain Man. For look at the wonderful home he has given us to live in.
And tell Chief Grey Wolf that when this is over, before we head back home, I'll see that another side of beef is delivered to your village in thanks for all that you've done to help us.
I would like to say there is no need, Mountain Man, but my belly will not let me deny it the chance to once again feast on something other than venison or bear or dog.
Smoke gave the young brave a salute and turned his horse's head around to the northwest to head for Pueblo and the railroad yards. Sheriff Buck Tolliver rode down the main street of Payday slowly, so everyone could see he was leading two horses behind him, each with a man folded face down across the saddle. He wanted the townspeople to see just how tough he was so they'd never even think about going against him, no matter what the provocation. As he rode, he nodded solemnly to the citizens who stared at the bodies riding silently behind him. He planned to tell anyone who'd asked that the two men were claim jumpers and that he'd had to kill them to protect the men whose claim they were trying to steal. But that was just a lie he cooked up on the way back to town. In truth, the men were two miners he'd come upon who were dancing around the campfire just outside of their mine. Tolliver had ridden up and dismounted, a wide smile on his face. When they heard him, the men stopped dancing and pulled pistols and pointed them at Tolliver until he opened his coat and showed them the star on his chest. The two relaxed and even kidded each other about being so scared about somebody finding out about their good fortune. Then, without warning, Tolliver had drawn and shot both men down before they could blink. Once he was finished with the men, he went into the men's cabin, searching for and finding four small canvas bags of gold dust and flakes they'd mined from the mine and small stream nearby. He stuck them in his saddlebag. Tolliver tied his horse up in front of the tent housing the local undertaker, and he stuck his head inside, interrupting Jonas Slackmeyer as he was planing the edges of a coffin down smooth and round.
Hey, Jonas.
Slackmeyer straightened up and wiped sawdust from his forehead with a dirty rag in his back pocket.
Yes, Sheriff.
I got you two new customers out here on a pair of horses. Give them the cheapest coffin you got and bury them over in Boot Hill.
And who will pay for their burial, Sheriff? The city?
Yeah. When you're done, take the horses over to the livery and tell the boy to take them out to my spread and add them to my remuda.
What about the saddles and such?
You can sell them and keep whatever you get for your trouble.
Oh, I thank you, Sheriff. I'll get right on.
And Jonas?
Yes, Sheriff?
This is city business, so there's no need speaking about it to any of the townspeople. You understand?
Of course, Sheriff. You can count on my discretion.
Tolliver rode his horse to the livery to have the boy brush him down and give him some grain, and to tell the boy Slackmeyer would be bringing a couple of horses for his remuda. As he dismounted, he saw a strange horse in one of the stables. It was a striking animal, gray with a series of spots on its rump, and it was heavily muscled and sleek-looking as it stood munching on a bucket of oats in its stall. Tolliver gave the boy his message, and then he nonchalantly asked who the new bronc belonged to.
Oh, that hoss belongs to some man over at the doc's office. His friends left him here in case he got well enough to ride before they get back.
What do you mean, before they get back?
They had a herd of horses to take home, and then he was going to come back here to see how their friend was doing.
What were these men's names?
I don't know. They told me the horse belongs to a man named Pearly, but they didn't give me their names.
Tolliver nodded and started to walk off.
I'll tell you one thing, though.
What's that?
The man riding with the one who gave me the money to pay for the horse's care is one of the biggest men I ever seen. And he was dressed all in buckskins like some of those old mountain men who used to come through here.
What'd this hombre look like?
I don't know.
Think, damn it!
Well, he's about 6 feet or a little more. Wide shoulders, lots of muscles, and he had yellow gray hair and no beard nor mustache.
Anything else? Was he healed?
Yeah, now that you mention it. He carried two pistols. The one on his left hip was butt first, and the one on his right was tied down low on his thigh. He also had a big knife stuck in the back of his belt. He looked about as dangerous a man as I've ever seen, and I sure as hell wouldn't want to do anything to make him mad at me.
Damn it to hell.
Tolliver whirled around and walked as fast as he could without actually running toward the doctor's office.
It can't be. It just can't be after all these years. Jesus. Take a hold of yourself, Buck. It's been more than 20 years since he's seen you. He couldn't possibly recognize you after all this time.
Still, he couldn't shake the bone-deep fear that coursed through his body at the very thought that Smoke Jensen might be in his town. Because he knew if that was the case, one of them wasn't going to leave the town alive. Buck Tolliver's heart had slowed down a little by the time he got to Doc Bentley's office without seeing Smoke Jensen anywhere around. He couldn't imagine what circumstances might have occurred that would bring the famous gunfighter to his little town out in the middle of nowhere. But if the man the boy in the livery was describing was Jensen, then Tolliver's prayers of more than 20 years had finally been answered. Just thinking about what he was going to do to Jensen if he was in town caused his heart to hammer again and a fine sheen of sweat to break out on his forehead. He found himself clenching his teeth so hard his jaw actually creaked.
Good morning, Sheriff. You having some tooth problems this morning, Buck?
No, thank the Lord.
Tolliver looked more closely at the doc now, thinking something was different. The doc was clean-shaven for one thing, and his eyes were unnaturally clear for this time of day. Usually by now he would have had a few shots of whiskey and would already be slurring his words. As he stared at the man, Tolliver noticed his hands had a fine tremor, but not that heavy shaking too much alcohol caused.
Something the matter, Doc?
No, Buck. It's just that I decided to give up drinking for a while. I think the alcohol was impairing my treatment of my patients, and so I'm trying to stay away from it. It's tough, but I reckon after a couple days I won't even notice it.
That's mighty nice, Doc. I'm sure your patients will appreciate the fact that you're sober when you work on them. But why did you suddenly decide to give it up now?
I just thought it was about time. Now, you said you didn't have any tooth problems, Buck.
I was just over at the livery, and the boy there said you had a new patient, someone from out of town. So I thought I'd mosey on over and see what the story was. You know how I like to keep up with any newcomers to town, especially if they suddenly come up in need of medical attention.
Oh, it's nothing for you to be concerned with, Buck. The man wasn't shot or stabbed or nothing like that.
Tolliver didn't speak. He just raised his eyebrows, knowing the doc wouldn't be able to resist telling him what was ailing his patient.
Man got snake bit out in the foothills of the mountains. He hit him twice, once in the leg and once in the neck. Wonder the poor man is still alive.
So how's the gent doing?
Can't rightly tell, Buck. He's been in a coma ever since he arrived. Hasn't stirred one little bit, except to moan in his sleep a couple of times.
You got a name for this feller?
Why, Buck? You think he might be on one of them wanted posters you got hung up in your office?
Never can tell, Doc. Being on the run or planning or on digging up some gold are about the only two reasons anybody would want to come all the way up here in the mountains of payday. Anyway, it's my job to check out any newcomers to the town.
Well, you can rest easy. This man's a cowboy up here herding horses he and his friends bought from the Nez Perce.
I didn't ask you what he did for a living, Doc. I asked if you knew his name so I can wire it over to Pueblo and see if he's wanted or anything like that. But it's all right if you don't know.
His name's Pearly. I don't know his last name.
Did the men who brung him in give you their names?
Yeah, and you'll never guess who it was, Buck. First time I know anyone famous ever set foot in payday, leastways since I've been here anyway.
I didn't come here to play guessing games, Doc.
Fellow who brought Pearly was named Jensen.
Would that be Smoke Jensen?
Yes, it was Smoke Jensen. Can you believe it, Buck? One of the most famous gunfighters in history, right up there with Wyatt Earp and Bat Masterson. Right here in my little office, bringing his friend to see me for treatment.
I know of him. You don't have to tell me how famous he is. Fact is, Doc, he was a famous gunfighter a few years back. But that was a long time ago, and I haven't heard much about him in the last 4 or 5 years.
Buck, you don't think he's wanted anywhere by the law, do you? I didn't think of that when he told me who he was, or I would have let you know he was here.
Not to my knowledge, but I might just wire Pueblo or Denver and see if there's any warrants out on him, just to be sure. I do know that in his day, it was said he killed over 200 men in various gunfights.
You know something funny, Buck? I remember the day Jensen and the other man brought his friend in to see me. Both Jensen and the young man with him had their guns tied down low on their thighs in the manner of gunslicks. I didn't think anything of it at the time, but it isn't the usual way cowboys around here wear their irons. Hell, it wasn't till he told me his name I even thought much about it.
Mind if I take a look at this patient of yours, Doc? Just in case I got a picture of him over at the office?
No, you go right ahead, Buck.
Tolliver went into the room where Bentley kept his bedridden patients and stood next to the bed with Pearly in it. He stared down at him as he slept and realized he didn't recognize him. The man who'd been with Jensen the last time Tolliver had seen him had been elderly 20 years ago and was most likely dead by now. This man was much too young to have ridden with Jensen when he was up in the mountains, or even later when he was on the Owl Hoot Trail.
All right, Doc. I'll let you know if I find out anything about Jensen or his traveling companions.
You do that, Sheriff, and I'll be sure to call you if I hear back from them or if this Pearly fellow wakes up. At least I hope he's going to wake up. Sure as hell don't want to lose a friend of a man like Jensen if he's as dangerous as you say he is.
Oh, I suspect he's still dangerous, Doc, even though he's getting up in age for a gunfighter. That man in there being Jensen's friend wouldn't have anything to do with why you stopped drinking, would it, Doc?
Well, Jensen may have mentioned it'd be better if I stayed sober until Pearly got well, but I was planning on doing it sooner or later anyway, Buck.
Did he threaten you, Doc?
No, Buck. Jensen didn't threaten me. He just reminded me it'd be better for me not to drink while I was taking care of a patient.
All right, Doc. But if that boy in there comes awake, you give me a holler, because I may just have a few questions to ask Mr. Pearly.